designed him to be. So, but I want you thinking about that. We've been in Job now for weeks, and we've heard a lot about God. We've heard a lot about a God of retribution. In other words, a payback God. And through all of that, we're studying this because we want to know God better. We want to be right in our understanding of God. I see a lot of people looking at the screen. If you walk into my office many days, you'll see this and you'll hear this. And it's a good thing that now, if Mama lands, I want to know it, okay? Because it's really cool when she lands. And sometimes she'd be like carrying a squirrel or something. So get ready. That's a live picture of an eagle's nest in Decorah, Iowa. And I was going to say, it's a good thing I got out of business when I did. Because Andrew, when I asked Jordan and Andrew to put that up, Andrew says, oh, that's what the girls at work watch all the time. And as I put in the program, there's been 140 million views. 140 million views of this just this spring. And at any time when you go on, there's usually about 30,000, 25,000, 40,000 people watching, and most of them work for Andrew, I think. So, but as you see the picture in the program, this was a situation where there were three eggs. There are three eaglets there. The part of the nest that you can see, that's about 5 feet. So that shows you how big those birds are. But hopefully, in the course of this, we'll see the other eaglet. They are just about ready to fly. And this whole process of watching these eggs, then watching these little furry balls, just little things, and now they're becoming these majestic eagles, starting to lose all of their dark feathers for some of the white feathers. And I hope Mama lands, because you'll see that. And we're gonna see how this relates to how God reveals himself. So let me know if Mama shows up, okay? Try to watch that, sort of, and listen to me, really. Okay? All right. Up until this time, we have had a lot of speculation about what God is like. And we've had Job's three miserable comforters. And we've had the young man, Elihu, who showed a lot of brilliance and a lot of courage. And actually, the writer of the book, I believe inspired by God, put him right before God finally speaks. And if you notice the cover of the program, that's a real picture of a tornado. See the face? To your right. Kind of looks like my first grade teacher, I thought, when I saw that. But God speaking, Becky gets it anyway. Never mind. God spoke. God finally enters the scene in a way that he is saying, enough. Enough speculation. And this is where the book takes a powerful turn, a very powerful turn. I got an email from my niece. She's a very interesting gal, she and her husband. He is a professor of medieval things at a college in Canada. She speaks Icelandic. You know, not everybody does this. And she's just a very, very bright, very spiritually minded gal. And they are part of an old order Roman Catholicism, Latin Mass, just very, very ultra conservative. They both came from Protestant backgrounds. Together, while they were in college in Scotland, they found this love for medieval things. And so, seriously, they attach themselves to what is very much a medieval church, this old order that they're a part of. And we have good relationship, good back and forth. This week she sent me an email, and here was the essence of it. And when I read this, I thought, man, this is Job in spades. In her community, which is strongly this conservative group in this community in Ontario, there is a strong conviction that couples should have as many children as they can have. Seriously. In fact, Laura said in her note that she cannot recall going to an event, church, school, community, and having a discussion with someone where the topic of fertility did not come up. Now, I've noticed at this age of my life, when I gather with old friends, we now talk about our aches and pains. It's funny because we didn't do that for 50 years, but now that's what we talk about. Laura says, no, in that group, they talk about fertility. Fertility is the supreme blessing from God. And she said, I have a friend, had 11 children. The last children were difficult birth, difficult on the mom, real hard. So she and her husband decided that she would get her tubes tied. We know what we mean by that. It wasn't tires. Okay? Yeah. This story takes an awful turn. She does this, 11 kids in tow. Their fourth child, a son, sometime later, takes his own life. While grieving, they go to the priest, and the priest says, I know why he took his own life. He took his own life because you got your tubes tied. And the night that he took his own life, had you not disobeyed God and gotten your tubes tied, the Holy Spirit would have been able to get through to you, but you had committed this sin that separated you from the Holy Spirit, and therefore you couldn't intervene on your own son, so his death is on you. The priest said this. I see people shaking their heads. That's brutal, isn't it? I don't know that God. I wouldn't, not because I'm great, but because he's great, I wouldn't represent that God. That is not the God of mercy that we talk about and whose mercy we live in and who reveals himself to Job. But the dynamic, and here's the thing, Laura said, and everybody around went, mm-hmm, yeah, that's the way it is, because the supreme good is have as many children as you can. Now, you know that I am not a basher of other Christians. I am not that, and I'm not doing that. But I'm saying this group, this priest, very, very sadly mistaken. A very, very sad theology. It is of utmost important to our lives that we have a healthy and proper view of God as he has revealed himself. And I wrote to Laura and I said, I would love to wrap my arms around that family and say, we grieve with you and we rejoice in the cross. And we rejoice in a God who would never willingly inflict this pain on you. But so much, these people are Job's comforters, are they not? When they're saying, hey, what happened to you is because you did this. You see, this wasn't just an ancient thing. This happens. We don't want to be this. The lightning strike was a warning to Bruce. We know that. We have to be so careful, and I say that jokingly, because when we start assigning judgment to people's difficulties, we've just usurped our position. That is not what we're supposed to do. We're to grieve with those who grieve, and we're to rejoice with those who rejoice. And so Job has heard all of this, and he has been the father or the mother of the loss. He's lost everything. And he's been told it's because you've done something wrong. And he can't think of what he's done wrong. And then, beautifully, amazingly, God speaks from this whirlwind. So our questions. Who do you think Job wants God to be? God is going to speak. What does Job want to know about God based on his life's journey? Remember last week we talked about Tate's pilgrimage? We're all on a pilgrimage. The story of Job is the story of his journey. It has an amazingly happy ending. I'm ruining the ending. Fine, I won't be here next week, but we'll end it the week after. You get relief next week. Who does he want God to be? Who do you want God to be? Who does God say he is? Let's turn to Job 38. How are our friends doing? Sac City this morning. We're just going to read this, friends. It's too beautiful. It's too beautiful to just pick and choose. We're going to read this and stop and gather some things from it. We're going to start with the first five words, though. Then the Lord answered Job. Who does Job want God to be? Who do we want God to be? And who does God reveal himself to be? Then the Lord answered Job. Job wants God to be personal so that he can feel and know and sense and live in the reality of a God who is in touch with him. Who do you want God to be? I've told this before, but we have many visitors. I went to a deal at Wesleyan one time when I was a student there, and the university chaplain opened the prayer. Rather than saying our Father or our God in heaven or whatever, this is what he said. Oh, great oblong blur. That sounded real personal. I don't want God to be a great oblong blur. Neither do you. And God doesn't reveal himself as that. He answered Job. He is personal. And this whole book up until this point has been one either presumptive judgment by his friends or self-preserving comment by Job, and every part of it is just full of questions about what is going on with Job. And the Lord answered him. The Lord answers. Seek the Lord while he may be found. Ask, and it will be given to you. Knock, and the door will be opened. These are things that we must understand, is that God is approachable. And to dismiss God as unknowable is to miss the entire point of God becoming a man in Jesus. And we'll get to that more later. But it's important right before we see what God says, I think it's just important we stop and say, God answered him. I hope as we've read Job and your heart's gone, oh, that stinks, man. Oh, no, losing all. It's time for the joy to come back into our bones because the Lord answered him. Now, what does God reveal about himself? This is cool. Then the Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind and said, who is this that darkens counsel by words without knowledge? The Lord isn't asking, like, would somebody tell me what's going on here? Because he knows exactly what's going on. It's all you guys, and you specifically, Job, you don't really know what you're talking about. Friends, that is a gift from God when he tells us, you're wrong. You're off. Your ways are not my ways. I want you to know my ways. Friends, that is an amazing gift, and it's why we need the scriptures. Left to our own devices, we come up with strange theologies. We need the counsel of God. Paul calls it the whole counsel of God. We need the scriptures. We need the Spirit that teaches us. We need God. I love this. I love, anybody got a King James open? Ben, are you on? Okay. Got one? Scott? You got it already? Read that verse, Adam. Verse 3. Adam's got it.
Gird up now thy loins like a man.
I love it. I think the King James wins in this little battle of the verses. Gird up thy loins. The only word we ever use there is up. But gird would be the root word of what other word we know? Girdle. Gird up thy loins. Protect your manhood because you are losing it. I love this verse because I need sometimes to look in the mirror and say, be a man. Are we listening in the foyer? Please. Fathers of sons, sometimes you look at your son and you say, gird up your loins like a man. Sometimes that's the best thing you can say to them. Stop. You know what God is saying to Job? Stop whining. Stop feeling sorry for yourself. Be a man. And get ready. Get ready for battle. Put on your cup. That's what he's saying. Because there's a line drive coming. That's what he's saying. It is time for you to receive from me. And you can't do it wimping. You can't do it feeling sorry for yourself. Feeling sorry for yourself is connected to shame. Shame is connected to the accuser. To feel shame, you've got to be accused. Who is the accuser? Satan means the accuser. If you walk around in life ashamed and feeling like I can't take what life is doling out for me and I am beaten, that does not come from God. That is not who he wants you to be. I don't care if your fields are flooded, you've lost your job, you're whatever, and I'm talking to myself. I've had seasons in my life where it was woe is me. God says, it's time for that to stop. Gird up your loins like a man. This wimpy ESV that I love, dress for action like a man. Not nearly as good, is it? I will question you, and you make it known to me. How about these questions? Where were you when I laid the foundation of the earth? Oh, I was down at the Coffee Hound. No. It's time for some perspective, Job. Where were you? Where were you when I laid the foundation of the earth? Tell me if you have understanding. Who determined its measurements? Surely you know. There's sarcasm in this, friends. Hey, you know how the universe is laid out. Or who stretched the line upon it to measure it? Interesting. On what were its bases sunk? Another baseball reference there. Not really. Or who laid its cornerstone? When the morning stars sang together and all the sons of God shouted for joy. Get that picture in your head. At creation, there's no fall. All is rich and beautiful. And they're singing in the universe. It's going to happen again. Pretty sweet, huh? Where were you, Job? How did that song sound? Or who shut in the sea with doors when it burst out from the womb? When I made clouds its garment and thick darkness its swaddling band. He's here. This is all a creation thing, isn't it? There's going to be two messages from God to Job. The first one is all about the magnificence of the mass of creation. And so this one is, hey, when water sprang from the springs of the deep wells or came down from the garment of the clouds, where were you? And prescribed limits for it and set bars and doors and said, thus far shall you come and no farther. And here shall your proud waves be stayed. What a poem. Question for Job. Have you commanded the morning since your days began and caused the dawn to know its place, that it might take hold of the skirts of the earth and the wicked be shaken out of it? I ask again. Who does Job want God to be? Who do you want God to be? Do you want God to have this kind of indescribable greatness? I hope we do. I hope we want a God who leaves no vacuums from his influence and his power. Because such a vacuum is lost, dark, unthinkable. And he's saying here in this run-by of creation, I leave no stone unturned. I'm everywhere. And where were you when I did that? When you start thinking, Job, that you are able to pull my strings, or that you want to design me in your image, and that's why I said we have to be careful. Who do we want God to be? Do I want him to be a God who teaches me or who just lets me continue in ignorance? It is changed like clay under the seal, and its features stand out like a garment. From the wicked, their light is withheld, and their uplifted arm is broken. Do we want a God of moral perfection? Or a God who just ignores evil? And who does Job want? It's the same God we want. Have you entered into the springs of the sea or walked in the recesses of the deep? I love, with my family, we love these like Planet Earth kind of shows. Or from the bottom of the ocean comes this new fish kind of thing that has no eyes or 12 eyes or one big eye or whatever. And when I do that, and when I watch those shows, I think of several things. I think of this passage because there are still so many unknown things that God knows. But also I think they show God's sense of humor in creation. Look at a giraffe, look at a zebra, look at me, okay? Have you comprehended the expanse of the earth? Declare if you know all this. Hey, Job, if you got the answer to these questions, come on. Where is the way to the dwelling of light, and where is the place of darkness? See, this is all so much like the creation story of Genesis, isn't it? Think back to on this day and on that day and on this day. Light, water, firmament. It's easy for me to say. What's happening with our friends? Kind of boring. I was hoping for some real action up there. Where is the way to the dwelling of light, and where is the place of darkness, that you may take it to its territory, that you may discern the paths to its home? You know, for you were born then, and the number of your days is great. Immense sarcasm. Excuse me. Have you entered the storehouses of the snow? Thank you, my friend. Or have you seen the storehouses of the hail, which I have reserved for the time of trouble, for the day of battle and war? All these extremities of weather, of the earth, even of light and darkness, God's saying, these are mine. I do this. I bring hail. I bring snow. Excuse me. We have created this term, Mother Nature. What a sweet term. I don't really mind it. But it's foolish if we say, there is this thing, Mother Nature, that's separated from this thing called God. That's not only foolish, that's dangerous. Yeah. What is the way to the place where light is distributed, or where the east wind is scattered upon the earth? Who has left a channel for the torrents of rain and a way for the thunderbolt to bring rain on a land where no man is, or on the desert in which there is no man, to satisfy the waste and desolate land and to make the ground sprout with grass? Has the rain a father, or who has begotten the drops of dew? From whose womb did the ice come forth, and who has given birth to the frost of heaven? The waters become hard like stone, and the face of the deep is frozen. Can you bind the chains of the Pleiades or loose the cords of Orion? Can you lead forth the Maseroth in their season? And can you guide the bear with its children? All that beautiful astronomical imagery there. Okay. Your rainstorm, your snow, your whatever. How about the stars? They're mine, God says. Do you know the ordinances of the heavens? Can you establish their rule on the earth? Can you lift up your voice to the clouds that a flood of waters may cover you? Can you send forth lightnings that they may go and say to you, here we are? Who has put wisdom in the inward parts or given understanding to the mind? I love this one. Where in the world do you think the ability to think comes from? Ever think about thinking? It's crazy. It's a bunch of cells bunch of protein stuff going on. I learned that in college. That's all I remember. Electrical impulses, I guess I remember a little more. But isn't it amazing? Who wired you for sound and for thought? Oh, I forgot. It's all an accident. And just as time's gone on, this whole ability to think and feel and love, all that's just natural outcropping of untamed forces and create and understand beauty. It's a very timely bit of questioning from God. Who can number the clouds by wisdom? Or who can tilt the water skins of the heavens? When the dust runs into a mass and the clods stick fast together, can you hunt the prey for the lion or satisfy the appetite of the young lions when they crouch in their dens or lie in wait in their thicket? Now he's moving to the creation of the animals. Who provides for the raven its prey when its young ones cry to God for help? Isn't that interesting? You know, there is this real mystery about what is going on in all of creation all the time, and their sense in creation of God. Because we're told in Romans, and so much, by the way, today is covered in Romans in a very theologically distinct way towards people's hearts, Christ, and the way things really are. And it says in Romans that all creation is groaning in wait for the revealing of the sons of God, of God's kingdom, of Christ the Creator. That creation is groaning. And here he's saying that the young ones cry to God for help and wander about for lack of food. Do you know when the mountain goats give birth? Do you observe the calving of the does? Ever think of what God is seeing and experiencing all the time and how cool it is? How limitless he is? And then Jesus says he cares about the sparrow that falls. We had what we consider an unfortunate thing working in the garden yesterday. We discovered a nest of bunnies, but it was too late for them when we discovered them. But I thought at the time, it's no surprise to God. He knows about this. And if we're sad that we tilled him, well, he understands that. See, there's no escaping his knowledge, his greatness, or his heart. Can you number the months that they fulfill, and do you know the time when they give birth, when they crouch and bring forth their offspring and are delivered of their young? Their young ones become strong. They grow up in the open. They go out and do not return to them. Who has let the wild donkey go free? Who has loosed the bonds of the swift donkey, to whom I have given the arid plain for his home? I love this thought of God, the artist creator. He creates an arid climate and he creates animals that thrive in it. And it's true, isn't it? Or an Arctic climate and animals that thrive in the Arctic climate and the salt land for his dwelling place. He scorns the tumult of the city. He hears not the shouts of the driver. He ranges the mountains as his pasture and he searches after every green thing. This wild donkey will not be tamed because God didn't make it to be tamed. Is the wild ox willing to serve you? Will he spend the night at your manger? Can you bind him in the furrow with ropes? Or will he harrow the valleys after you? I think that's hilarious. Try to tame a wild ox and you're going to end up plowing up the land you didn't intend to plow. God's being humorous in old school farming methods. I don't think most of us get it. No, Mama? Okay. This is live, by the way. We have no control over this. Rob, I want you to stay here until the mama comes, all right? All right. Will you depend on him because his strength is great? And will you leave to him your labor? Do you have faith in him that he will return your grain and gather it to your threshing floor? See, God is really sarcastic here with Job. But it's starting to he's just laying it on him. You need to know how much I do and know. And that's without limit. And appreciate that. Appreciate my connection to my creation. The wings of the ostrich wave proudly, but are they the pinions and plumage of love? For she leaves her eggs to the earth and lets them be warmed on the ground, forgetting that a foot may crush them and that the wild beast may trample them. See, even in this, he's saying, that ostrich waving its wings proudly, and this is how they mate. And if you've ever seen any of these mating rituals of some of these birds, they're really amazing to watch. And how the prairie chickens puff up their chests, the males do, and they have this big girding up their loins like chickens thing that they do. And God's saying, but if they're proud of themselves, they're forgetting the fact that this wild ox can come along and step on their eggs. Because they don't self-exist. And I believe the great sin of mankind today is we somehow believe we exist by ourselves and for ourselves. And that relates to our view of government, to our view of education, to our view of the church, to our view of the family and of the community. By ourselves and for ourselves. And God's saying, nope. She, this is the mama ostrich, deals cruelly with her young as if they were not hers. Though her labor be in vain, yet she has no fear because God has made her forget wisdom and given her no share in understanding. When she rouses herself to flee, she laughs at the horse and his rider. The very nature of animals is God given. And it's fun, isn't it? And it's cool. And it's frightening. And it's God's way. Now, I think my favorite passage in this whole business begins right here. Because I love horses. Do you give the horse his might? Do you clothe his neck with a mane? Do you make him leap like the locust? His majestic snorting is terrifying. Picture this horse. He paws in the valley and exults in his strength. I remember one time I read this passage and I showed some footage from Seabiscuit. Do you remember that? When, you know, Seabiscuit was a failure as a horse, and then he got a new trainer, a new owner, and a new jockey, and this loser, ugly horse became a world beater as these guys worked with him. And he grew in his love of running. And in this, if you remember this scene, they send him out through the countryside. And he just goes faster and faster and faster. And the music it's awesome. Rent Seabiscuit sometime. Get chills when you think of this passage. He paws in the valley and exults in his strength. He goes out to meet the weapons. He laughs at fear and is not dismayed. He does not turn back from the sword. Upon him rattle the quiver, the flashing spear, and the javelin. With fierceness and rage, he swallows the ground. He cannot stand still at the sound of the trumpet. When the trumpet sounds, he says, "Aha!" Abigail, did you ever hear your horse say "aha"? You just don't understand horse. He smells the battle from afar, the thunder of the captains, and the shouting. Is it by your understanding that the hawk soars and spreads his wings toward the south? Is it at your command that the eagle mounts up and makes his nest on high. We first saw two bald eagles, amazingly noble creatures, building a nest. Then we saw three eggs laid. We saw them sitting those eggs. Then one hatches, two hatches, and it appears the third one is not going to hatch. Were you there when it happened? Third one hatched. And then we've watched God's brilliance in teaching Mama Eagle how to keep these from falling out of the nest before they can fly, feeding them, instilling in them what is necessary so that someday they can become Mama and Papa Eagles. It is amazing to watch. Where does that come from? Who gives the eagle what it takes to do this? How about it? Thank you. How close is God to us? He's here right now. He'll go with us today when we go on vacation. If he didn't, I wouldn't leave. He's with you every second. He's with the family in Ontario that's hurting so badly, blaming themselves. And I pray that he breaks through that bitter kind of teaching. Do you want a God who's able to do this? Did you think of this? Who he is. Is it at your command that the eagle mounts up and makes his nest on high? On the rock he dwells and makes his home, on the rocky crag and stronghold. From there he spies out the prey. I've seen squirrels, I've seen chipmunks, I've seen all kinds of rodents. It's been fun, except for the rodent. His eyes behold it afar off, his young ones suck up blood. I've seen it. And where the slain are, there is he. And the Lord said to Job, shall a fault finder contend with the Almighty? That's a pretty good question, isn't it? Is there anybody who can really contend with God and prevail? Well, the answer to that is no. But the beautiful answer is, I think he invites us to question him, if we're willing to receive his answers. That's important. Because, friends, Jesus is God. And when Jesus became a man, he just mixed into what we'll use this term, milieu, of his community like you and I do. And he was available. And he was engaged, and he laughed, and he cried, and he told jokes, and he laughed at jokes, probably even lame ones, because he's a nice guy. He who argues with God, let him answer it. Now, here's where we'll end today. Well, we're not going to end here, but here's where we end this part. Then Job answered the Lord. I mean, after this, the Lord has just hit you with this blast of where were you when I made this and that and everything and the wild goats having baby oxen and all this. No, I'm just seeing if you're listening. And so Job was like, whoa, pinned back. I'm feeling maybe like God is bigger than I am and I'm starting to get some perspective here. Then Job answered the Lord and said, behold, I am of small account. What shall I answer you? I lay my hand on my mouth. I have spoken once. I've already said. And I will not answer twice. But I will proceed no further. In 2 weeks, we're going to go through this whole girding up your loins again. Because look at verse 7. It's the same thing. God is not done with Job. But it is in this not being done with him that we're going to find Job saying, my life now is better than it was before all this happened. How can that be? Be here in 2 weeks for that. In closing, I want us to all turn to Colossians. Little book, Paul writing to the Colossians. Every one of us has a theology. If we're not a Christian, we still have a theology. In other words, we have what we consider to be our understanding or lack of understanding about God. This is imperative theology. Okay, look on your church Bible, if you don't have the big print, page 983. After Philippians, before Thessalonians, Colossians, itty-bitty book, very powerful. This is beautiful, critical, mandatory Christian theology, what we're going to have here in our understanding of who God reveals himself to be. Who do we want him to be? I want this God. And I pray that you do too. Speaking of Christ, let's start with verse 13. He has delivered us from the domain, this is chapter 1. He has delivered us from the domain of darkness and transferred us to the kingdom of his beloved Son, in whom we have redemption, the forgiveness of sins. I want a God who accepts my brokenness, which is manifest. I want a God who is able to deal with my failures. Oh, it's done. It's been done. God is not going to punish me for my sins and say to the Father's not going to say to Jesus, it was pretty good for Dave, but you didn't cover this. Sorry it hurt so bad. This is the problem with theology that says the cross is not enough, therefore I got to punish you some more. He laid on him the iniquity of us all. I want a God who is able to forgive, and that's Jesus. And now we get into this whole Job talk, this whole Genesis talk. He is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of all creation. For by him all things were created in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or rulers or authorities. All this talk that God did with Job, God, the one God who Jesus is in human flesh, he made all that stuff and made it all happen and still does, because we're going to keep going here. All things were created through him and for him. And he is before all things, and in him, all things hold together. The simple answer to who does Job want God to be, and who do I want God to be, and who does God reveal himself to be, there's a simple answer. Jesus. Isn't it something? It's the truth. Therefore, let us embrace Jesus. Let us read about Jesus. Let us talk to Jesus. Let us talk about Jesus. Let us know that the dark places are revealed by his light. And he wants that light to shine and to stay. Let us know that the confusion when bad things happen, that he's not saying, aha, gotcha. No. He's weeping with us as he wept with his friends when his friend Lazarus died. He aches with us because he's one of us. and he's the creator of the world. Is there a bigger story? Is anything trump that? That's the way things really are, friends. Let's sing.